Hello friends, now we come to chapter 12, which is about organizational change and effectiveness. What are the learning objectives of this chapter? After completion of this chapter, you should be able to understand the concept of organizational change, various forces of change influencing organizational change, the process of planned change and its various nuances. So how does change happen? What are the planned changes that takes place and what are the different activities around it? The causes of resistance to change and way to reduce this resistance. Approaches to managing change, the process of institutionalization of change by ingraining it into the organizational culture. We've been talking about culture, we've been talking about organizational climate. So we will now understand how do we incorporate this change at the level of the culture. And emotional coping and stress management that emanates from change. So when you undergo change, you go through a lot of discomfort, right? So that creates a lot of stress. So how do we manage and cope up with these stressors? So these are the learning objectives that are there for the chapter now. How do we define change? Change in organization may be due to environmental changes, due to environmental factors that are forcing us to change. People in the organization tends to resist this change. How do we deal with it? In order to overcome resistance to change, organizations employ formal processes for managing organizational change. So there are a lot of initiatives that takes place to manage change. There is a whole concept of change management team. So in some organization, you will have a team called as lies within HR. They are specifically trained on change management processes. So they deal with initiative which pertains to change in the organization. So change in the environment often requires change within the organization first, operating within that environment. If the environment is saying that, okay, stay home, stay safe, you are not supposed to step out of the home in order to take precautions, be home, do whatever you can from home remotely, the organization also has to adopt that. So change in the environment often requires change within the organization operating within that environment. It may also involve a change in the company structure, strategy, policies, procedures, the technology that you use, and the culture. Organizational change is about nothing but reviewing and modifying the management structures that you have and the business processes. So if you are going through transformation, so it requires change. So for that, you will have to adopt ways and means of achieving those change. So it has to happen in the organization level. So hence, the structures and business processes needs to undergo change. Organization change occurs when business strategies or major sections of the organizations are altered. It cannot happen in one particular section of the organization. It has to happen at the org-wide level. It is also known as change, described as reorganization in some context. Restructuring, it could be also turnaround. An organization going through a transformation is said to be undergoing the change process. So any organization which calls themselves saying that we are at the transforming stage, you understand. I recently have been working on a project on a transformation for one of the insurance companies. They are undergoing major transformation. So for that, I work closely with them with regards to some initiatives which lead towards those changes. The environment in which organizations today are working is never in a stable state. We have seen this in the last 2 years, the amount of change that we have gone through. Even the organizations which are in the market leadership positions also requires to have change. So VUCA, has anybody heard about the term VUCA? It is an acronym that has come to stay in today's world. It has been in prevalence since last 3-4 years, very, very contextualized in the corporate sector. VUCA was first used in 1987 on the leadership theories of Warren Bennis and Bert Nanos. So they described to reflect on the full form of VUCA is volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. So when you talk about volatility, you know it's dynamic, it's volatile, anything can happen. Uncertainty, we don't know what we don't know. Third is complex, it's difficult, it's not easy that comes along, and it is ambiguous. So all these four things are comprises of the word VUCA, and VUCA is here to stay. And it got established, the term got established first in 1987, and we have been drawing parallels on leadership theories from the Warren Bennis and Nanos. So they have described to reflect on these four parameters. Which talks about volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity for general conditions and situations. Now, there are six specific forces that stimulates change. What are those? The first is the nature of workforce. The nature of workforce is changing by every passing day. Organizations must adapt to the global environment, the demographic changes, cross-border movement of people, outsourcing. All these are your different processes that are undergoing change. Earlier, everything has to be within the organization. Gone are those days. We outsource half of our things which are not core to the organization. We automatize a lot of things. We take resources on pay for work mode. We operate from the gig economy standard, so that we just take work, pay them, and that's about it. Constantly evolving technology. Every day in and day out, we are seeing a new technology coming into being. So we just about completed learning the new technology which has been incorporated in the new working standards, and we learned it, we got used to it. Now we started working on it, we kind of transformed in the technology. Time has come, there is a new technology again. The company wants to undergo another change. So constantly evolving technology. The third, the varied competition. Can we control competition? Is it either controllable or even influenceable? Competition is very rarely been even be able to influence. And organizations are facing constant global competition, whether it is with competitors locally or foreign. The fourth is the need for flexibility. As I mentioned, as we have been discussing earlier also, it has your processes and your practices and your rules and regulations have to be agile enough to be able to cater to the needs of the end user. So need for the flexibility. In order to be successful organization, the organizations need to be quick and able to develop and market new products at quick and fast pace. The moment the requirement came in, you have to work hard to be able to cater to that need. Else, there are 10 other people who are contemporary with you sitting there waiting for the business. So if you cannot do, somebody else will. Changing social trends. This is very, very volatile again. The social trends are evolving, and consumers are constantly in touch with each other via various social media. Everybody knows what's going on. For example, if you see the moment you say, for example, you must be using a lot of shopping sites. For example, you have browsed, a laptop from Amazon. You have been doing that for 2-3 days. You've been just researching which one is best, which one to take it, which one is effective for me, which is less, which is cost effective. You're looking for all of those things, but you have not yet ordered anything. So what you will see is next day, the moment you open a Facebook or the moment you open Google, you will see some different options of Flipkart or the other websites coming on for you as a preferred mode of choice, where you can again browse. So which is what it is, this is how the trends are changing. This is how the impactful the change is. You have not even said, just because you as a user have browsed all these websites, immediately you have the trend picking up and immediately you get exposed to other websites as well. So if Amazon is not providing you what you require, Flipkart will, right? So customers are, so you're constantly in touch with social media. Okay, and increasing environmental concerns. So what are these? These are some sensitivities towards the environment that are on rise nowadays. Okay, which are on rise amongst the consumers, employees and organizations. Everybody want to do something towards the society, towards the environment. They do not want to get involved on things which damages or impacts the organization, impacts the environment negatively. So either changes can just happen with no prior planning, or it can be just a very, very planned effort. It can be done in a phased manner as well. It can be done in a planned manner. So two main goals of plan change. The first goal is that it attempts to better the organization potential to adjust to the environmental change. It completely attempts to improve the organization potential and adjust as per the requirement, as per the change that is happening in the environment. It also attempts to transform the employer behavior. So these are at two levels. One is on the potential, organizational potential, to adjust to the environmental changes that are occurring. And second is to be able to transform the employee behavior, to be able to adjust in that particular system. For that, how do we actually work with this change, with the plan change? So we use change agents for it. So what are those change agents? Who are those change agents? The onus of any kind of change always lies with them. Change agents can see futuristically what, unlike others, they will always drive motivation and invention and efficiently execute the vision. Okay, so the organization has decided the goals, so now they have assimilated entire the change agents together, and they said, you are the change agents for the organization, you will help us completely disseminate these changes across the organization. So you guys are responsible for doing that. So hence what they will do is they will drive the motivation for people to change. They will make sure that they efficiently handhold people and be able to execute the organizational expectation. Example, here what happens, managers or team members, new or existing, it can be managers which are recently incorporated in the organization, or they could be external consultants as well. The lot of change agents, as I mentioned to you, I have worked in change management initiatives in some of the organizations as an external as well, okay, apart from this, and also as an internal when I was in the HR. So HR managers are also planned, are change agents, okay, which are, so for example, if you see, organizations like HLL, Godrej, LG, they have strong change agents for these organizations. So they bestow these responsibilities on the shoulders of HR managers. They may face failure owing to resistance from others in the organization because they are only few. They are only about 10, 12 people who is comprised of the change agent and also called as change committee. Okay, so what they will do is they will go through a lot of resistance where anybody is not very comfortable with change, right? All of us want to continue and be comfortable the way we are. Nobody is happy with the change. So there's obviously ought to be resistance. So hence these change agents have to overcome these resistances and be able to come out and be able to succeed in these kind of uncertain resistances around. So most people, if you ask me, if I am used to having my slider on the right hand side, if somebody said that from the right hand you just hold the door and operate your slider from the left hand, I will be very, very uncomfortable, isn't it? Because I'm not used to that. I may do it once or twice, I may do it like this for a while, and then over a period of time, what I will do after about a few minutes, I will shift the slider to my right hand side because I'm not used to this change. So people find change as intimidating to the extent that despite having data-backed information, okay, data is completely backed, completely foolproofed for change, they tend to seek some data that goes against the change and stick to it. They will find some of the other ways and means of negating that, saying that, this will not work, and then finally they will come out of it. Third is, trust involves faith in the intentions and behavior of others. Mutual mistrust will also doom an otherwise well-conceived change initiatives in to failure. Because if you do not have, if there is a gap in the understanding or in the trust between the agents who are initiating change with the other employees in the organization, there could be a gap and it could owe to towards a failure as well. Now, when we talk about change resistance, there are three things that we talk about, right? We talk about the causes and preconditions. So what caused the changes? What is it that we are looking at? Why is it causing those changes? So while we are going through those change, what are the reactions amongst the people? Where it is triggering? And what are the consequences? What are the results of this change? Right? So causes and preconditions. So what are the people? Obviously, everybody has got their own characteristics. They have an internal context. Okay, you know, if this happens, this is what I may lead into. Okay, if this happens, my job might become completely redundant. So what is the change process? There could be some perceived impact already, because they might feel that my job is already redundant. You know, my job has already been wiped out. They might see those kind of preconditions in their mind the moment the change has been embarked on. So what are some of the reactions that employees would go through? There could be some emotional reactions, emotional setbacks. You know, I'm very used to this, I'm very attached to it. So the person may become emotionally unstable. There could be cognitive reactions where they might just manipulate it to something else. There could be some behavioral issues that the person becomes grumpy, that the change has not been taken so well. So hence, it is kind of reflecting through behavior. And what could be the consequences? The consequences could be work-related or could be personal also. So for example, if there's because of change, if some particular role needs a transfer, does not matter who's in that role. So X person is in that role and requires, we had two people and two in two different regions, both were managing individual, but right now we are downsizing and we are going through this change and we will have only one person. So one person has already been moved, has been already moved to some other department, and the one who's there has to move to the head office. He was in the regional team. So now the person has to move. So it could be either work related, that person might go through some personal exigencies as well while you offer him a transfer. So it could be work related or it could be personal consequence as well. So three things: causes and preconditions, reactions, and then the consequences. So the positive implication of resistance to change is that it may lead to open discussions and debate. There might be people who would come in off open, say that I am not comfortable with this. Why don't we relook at it? Which is a much preferred reaction to silence and avoidance, by the way. It's much better if people come up in the open and say that, you know what, hey, I'm not comfortable. Please relook at it. Okay, instead of just assimilating it and just going with the flow without saying anything, without reacting anything. Quietly, this person will just look for a job and will just create a gap there. So there are no standard ways by which resistance to change surfaces. Okay, you cannot measure a standard way that how change can actually come up. Okay, resistance, how the resistance can come up actually. The resistance can actually be apparent. It could be tacit, it could be instant, or it could be also delayed. Okay, so apparent when you are apparent, when you see it, obviously, you know, you can, it is evident. And, you know, it could be just quick. The moment change initiative started, you can see instant reactions. It could be a delayed reaction as well. Okay, so dealing with apparent or instant resistance, such as, you know, customer complaint, work slowdown, a strike threat, you know, these are much simpler for the management to deal. There are some main forces which drives resistance to change. For example, individual forces in the form of human features, like which are very, very underlying and it is not visible, which are perceptions, personalities and needs. So these are the three internal forces, individual forces, which are in the form of human features. they are very, very big forces which work as an obstacle towards change. Organizational forces in the form of structural setups of organizations. And a change is not always good because speed may result in poor decisions as well. So every time we cannot consider that change is happening, so obviously it has to have a positive outcome, not necessarily. And because of the speed that you are, you know, going through, it might just lead into some hasty decisions, and it might sometimes, you know, you may not be able to realize the full scale of the effects or the real costs that are involved in it. So you will end up doing initiatives, taking up initiatives after initiatives, but actually undermine the whole thought of the kind of cost that it is building up. Okay, so some resist as a political strategy also, just to prove that you're wrong. You have seen that is happening in our country, right? So, people may just resist change just as a political strategy. They may also resist to show that the person leading the change is not up to the task. If you have interpersonal issues between the change agent and the employees, you may also have a problem there, because the employees will deliberately not be able to cooperate because of the fact that they do not have healthy IPR, healthy interpersonal relationships. So how do we overcome these resistance to change now? What do we do? We understand that there are resistances. People are not willing to change. How do we overcome these resistances now? The following tactics can help change agents overcome resistance to change. What are those? Educating them. Communicating at regular intervals. So not necessarily everybody resist for the sake of resisting, but there are people who are not educated enough in that sector. They do not understand what are the pros and the cons of the change. What are the impact that it will lead to? What will be the end in mind? They are not aware. Hence, they need to be educated. They need to be communicated at regular intervals. They need to be involved in participation of this change process. So give them some responsibilities. You will see a lot of takers then. Building support and commitment. Okay, build support mechanisms. If you do this, if you give 2 hours of time to the change initiative, your rest of those 2 hours are being, taken care by your, you know, manager or maybe one of your peers, because you have come and participated in the change management initiative. Develop positive relationships, manipulation and co-optation. Selecting people who accept change, okay, and make sure that you always select those people who are willing to change and who are adaptable. Do not take people who are already cribbing, who are already making a nuisance towards the change, and coercion. Let's see one by one. Let's deep dive into it. How do we overcome resistance to change by each and every parameter? Educating, as I already mentioned to you, educating and communicating the employees on the change logic, how it will help them and how it will minimize the employee resistance on 2 accounts. First, it will help them overcome the impact of incorrect information that is already building up, which is preconceived, okay, and which not necessarily be the reality. So they would just due to incorrect information, they will have some prejudices in mind. Due to poor communication on receiving correct and real. So while you educate them with correct information, facts and figures and everything, the resistance would slowly and steadily be alleviating. Second is to communicate. Communication can help the market, help you to market the need, to be able to socialize it amongst the organization, amongst the different employees in the organizations. Okay, so communication can help you to actually sell your concept. Okay, sell the whole concept or whole initiative of change through proper information sharing. Because everybody is now hearing the same language. Everybody is hearing the same, keywords when you talk about the change. Everybody is understanding the same way when you're talking about the initiative. So because only change champions or the change agents are going and communicating. So how do you help employees participate in this process? Since it is difficult to go against the decision, one way is to one very, very good way is to help them participate on it. Okay. And organizations can expect to reduce resistance from employees by encouraging meaningful contribution and involvement from them. Whether it could be on brainstorming sessions, whether it could be on some projects, whether it could be on some action learning, or maybe some key initiatives in the organization. So help them get involved on it. So once they get involved in it, they feel immersed and they feel that, oh yes, it is actually working in the benefit of all of us. So you will see more torchbearers coming in. However, this based on the assumption that employees have requisite expertise, and if it is not so, there could be some possibility of a poor decision as well. Okay, and could be loss of time also, because time is equal to money. So we can see if the participation is just for the heck of it, you may just lose out on time, or maybe it could be sometimes lead into a poor decision because you have let wrong people participate on it. Okay, then comes your building support and commitment. In order to build support and commitment from employees for the change, so rather than preferring status quo, organizations should eliminate their fears first. So they should just work on the psychological level first. Okay, that they should not have, they should rule out all kinds of fears and anxieties that the employees are going through because of having the mindset of something which is, you know, letting them become redundant probably. Okay, so hence it is through proper counseling, therapy, sending them to off work or asking them to take a short vacation, or sending them for some developmental training or behavioral training, these can aid to building support and commitment from the employees. An overall commitment towards the organization also will help employee to show lesser resistance here. Okay, and over a period of time, what they will do is they'll start getting adjusted to it, and they will be redirecting their focus towards the change which they're expecting in terms of, because they have accepted that they have understood that ultimately this change is working to their benefit. So once they understand that, so overall commitment slowly and steadily will come into the organization. So how do we develop positive relationships now? Now, what do you mean by positive relationships? So for example, when people trust, when there is enough trust and confidence in each other amongst peers, amongst the manager subordinate relationship, who wants to implement change, then they are more willing to accept changes. If you know somebody already very well and you are very, very in tune and in aligned with that particular manager, and that particular manager is actually a change agent, you will see a lot of commitment from the employees on the change game. So if managers are able to foster positive relationship, they will be able to get support from those employees who generally dislike changes. So even if they dislike changes, just because of the fact that they trust and they have confidence in this particular manager, they will be able to instill those changes. They will be able to overcome the resistance created by these employees. So sometimes manipulation also works. So sometimes you manipulate the whole situation. You just twist the facts and you make them more attractive with the contextualized situation, because you twist it with considering the benefit of the change. Okay, so you are expecting support from the team, from the employees. So hence you are twisting the facts a bit. Okay, so twisting facts to make them more attractive, withholding information with you, half information sharing, false threat to shut the production unit. Another thing like, you know, wage cut, if at all we do not do a double up our shifts, because, in a lot of organizations, a lot of these industrial organizations have gone through this co-optation because of the fact that, you know, they have lost so many hours and their production was completely on standstill. The shop floor people cannot operate. They work on machines, right? The machines cannot be taken home. Our laptops can, but machines cannot be taken home. So what they do is, they were sitting at home doing nothing actually. So one of the industrial client has been my client, and they have said they have typically lost about 8 months completely of production. So a threat like a manipulation, like a wage cut or something like that really works in benefit, saying that, you know, either you take a wage cut or you increase your shift timings by 2 hours. So a lot of people, you get a majority of the people saying yes to the extension of hours, right? So management would be using co-optation in the above cases if it appoints in a prominent role. One of the leaders of the resisting group in order to get his or her endorsement on the change and not advice for a better solution. So here what happens is, so many times you take account of, say, you've seen a lot of unions which happens within the industrial plants. So you co-opt the leader of that particular group and you convince him. And the leader in turn goes and convinces and gets the belief of the entire agreement of the entire team, and that goes to the change that helps them to overcome resistance. Now, next point is that we need to select people who accept change willingly, not forcibly. But people's personality determines their ability to adopt change, isn't it? I mean, it's also about the personality. If the personality is very, very rigid and very, very, a person who is not at all change-oriented will always go through difficulty while accepting change. So therefore, some people may have a greater positive attitude towards change than others, right? There will be some people who will be doing much better in terms of acceptance of change. So how do we do this? Some of the personality traits that a very clear articulation of personality context is given over here. Okay, so what happens is that some personality traits like openness to experience, risk-taking ability, flexibility, positive self-concept, high general mental ability. These are some of the personality traits that work best in this particular context. When you know that these are the personality traits which are already attributed, which are already been articulated, so why not select people having these particular traits in it? For that, you might undergo some test, you might get them exposed to some situations to be able to identify the right personalities. Last is coercion. So last on the list tactics is coercion, the application of direct threat or force on the resistors. So people who resist, directly give them a threat. It's okay. If management really is determined to close a manufacturing plant whose employees do not, acquiesce to a pay cut, the company is using coercion. The company is straight away saying that, okay, their companies aren't like I mentioned earlier, the company is giving an option in co-optation stage. But here, the company is not giving you an option. Company is straight away saying that you do this or I will have to, or we will have to shut shop. So, you are left with no options, do or die situation. Yeah, so that's the coercion. So, some of the examples of coercion are threats of transfer, loss of promotion, that this year you will not get the promotion, we are not doing enough profits, we are not able to give any kind of promotions. Negative performance evaluations, a poor letter of recommendation. The advantages and drawback of coercion are approximately the same as for manipulation and co-optation. So there are no difference, but here it is, the things are more direct. There it is slightly manipulative and slightly indirect. That's the only difference, but approximately the advantages and the drawbacks are the same. Now, politicking and change. How do you control this? How do you influence this whole situation of politicizing? Political activity is triggered by change as it endangers the existing state of affairs. So any kind of change will always politicize the situation. Right? There'll be a lot of small groups, subgroups which will create, and they will talk about something and then they will be working against the change agents. So this suggests that drive for change is likely to come from a new employee or managers who have been removed from current power structure and not old managers, as for them change is a threat to their status and position. Because what happens, the old managers who have been there in the organization through thick and thin, they will consider it as a status quo for them. Okay, so it will be like a question for them to change. So hence it is always better to drive make the new employees more responsible to bring in the change. New employees and the new managers, or the managers who have been removed from those responsibilities earlier. Many times organizational leadership is changed when the management is looking at implementing radical changes. So a lot of organizations go through leadership changes. So whenever you want to go through, you take leaps to bring in radical changes, you will definitely do a little bit of restructuring at the leadership level. Since change is constant in an organizational setup, coming up as a sudden or, planned, it becomes important to manage the organizational change. Now, there are several approaches to managing change. What are those approaches? Let's look at three most commonly used approaches. So what are those? The first one is Lewin's classic three-step model of change. Second one is Kotter's eight-step plan action research project. The third one is the organizational development. Okay, so these are the three approaches that we are going to discuss in detail. So according to Lewin's three-step model, what happens here? Let me just show you the slide over here. Okay, so according to Lewin, change is a series of processes occurring over a period of time. And under this model, he recommends that for a change, typically three steps are required. First, you need to unfreeze the whole thing. You need to unfreeze them from the situation that they are in. You need to be moving into that change and then finally freeze it. So three steps: unfreeze, bring the change, stabilize it, and refreeze it. Okay, so unfreeze means here it ensures that employees are ready for change. So when you unfreeze, you completely get the commitment of the employee saying that, yes, we are on the way to change. We accept that we are going through change. So change is a two-way process, as I mentioned earlier. You have to have, it has to happen on agreement. Okay, so people have ensured, here you take the employee's commitment and their readiness for changes. Second is you implement the change. You execute the intended change. You execute what you wanted to change. Say, for example, you were all your reports used to be on Excel and on a manual format. Okay, and now you have moved to SuccessFactors, and all your reportings, everything, all your documentation, everything happens on SuccessFactor model software. So there, all the reports are, of course, automatized. And once you create it, you create it. If at all, you go through some processes to undergo changes there, right? So you executed the intended change. So everything, all the reports, all the paperwork has been minimized and it has to be brought into the software. Okay, now you've done this, you've lived on the change. And then finally you say, okay, this ensures the change becomes permanent. Now, in order to ensure that the change becomes permanent, you say that, okay, this is the way we are going to work from now on. This is what is the refreezing stage, where you say that, okay, we have agreed that we want to change. We have worked towards the change. We have implemented it. Now we want to make it permanent and we want to refreeze this. So this is a very easy and very quick model to undergo organizational change, as described by Lewin. Thank you so much, everybody.